I want to thank you for checking out another podcast of Ferocious Talk, where we ain't scared. My name is A1, and last week's podcast was really good. We talked about no neutral. It had to do or deal with people that think or believe that not taking a stand as it relates to police brutality or the oppression of black people because they don't want to offend or risk jeopardizing some opportunities with certain aspects of white America is not the answer to helping everybody in society, in particular black people. So get on over to Podomatic.com under Society and Culture. You can also find me at iTunes under the category Personal Journals. You can get on over to Twitter at We Ain't Scared, also on Twitter at Ferocious Talk. And as always, I want to take the time to shout out Black Lives Matter. Please keep doing what you're doing, and I will continue to shout out Black Lives Matter. They are important and necessary, and especially in today's climate, with all the racial hatred and oppression, the police brutality and unnecessary killings of black people, unarmed black people in America. And weaintscared.com. Get on over to weaintscared.com. That is now back online. I know it's been down for about a month. We're going to be making continuous updates to it. We got the shirts over there. We Ain't Scared. They're only 24 bucks. So there's some other items there as well. So check that out. Ferocious for Flint is, we were on a 10-city tour raising money for water filters. And we have some things coming up in 2018 that we will be doing again for Flint. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into today's topic. And it is Malcolm or Martin. Malcolm or Martin. And how this sort of topic came to me last week, I was just sort of thinking about the climate and the racial climate in America, especially in light of last year's election and who's in the White House right now. And I asked myself, what would 2017 look like if Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. had survived their assassinations? What would it look like if they still had, that same energy and the mentality? What would it look like in 2017? So I did sort of a side-by-side comparison because it was important. I know some people have half the picture image, and while I cannot capture all of their personality traits or characteristics, I'll do my best. And then, of course, you can go online and you can do more research. So initially, as I look at my notes, both, I believe, would be supportive of Black Lives Matter. Some people have pegged Malcolm as someone that would lean more towards violence to get his point across because of his statement, by any means necessary. And then there's an iconic image of him holding an assault rifle, peering through drapes out of the window of his home, not realizing that that was after his home had been, there'd been death threats made against him. So that was why he did that. It wasn't directed at law enforcement. It was basically him taking a stand to protect his family. Okay, now Martin, I definitely believe, would have supported Black Lives Matter also because Black Lives Matter. It wouldn't have been a stretch, in my opinion, for the both of them to be supportive of that. So now we want to sort of break down some of their attributes. Now, Malcolm was very vocal and unafraid and literally scared white folks, which I think was a good thing. I think there was, in the 60s, there was this heavy, thick layer of intimidation from the Klan, from police, and hate groups. And it's ironic that you can say that about the 60s, and in 2017, it's still the same. It's amazing. So he was unapologetically black, right? And he called them white devils. I think he was the first openly spoken black, strong black man to call white people white devils. And that raised the ire and the anger of a lot of white Americans and their inability to accept the fact that it was their violent history that pushed and forced him into that reality. Malcolm was intelligent. He was very, very smart, well-read, and very interested in understanding, one, where his people came from, and how we got to this point. And there were interviews, and you can go on YouTube and you can just type in Malcolm X interviews, and you will see that even though the white interviewers were posing these questions, a lot of these questions that they were posing, you could tell that they were trying to set him up for an emotional, illogical, and irrational response. Right? Like they just wanted him to go on a rant about kill all white people. Now, what he did very cogently was to spell out and articulate that white America committed a crime, point blank. And because they committed this crime against black people, it was time for them to, for there to be some accountability, right? That America had to atone for these things. And that his voice was, he was going to lend his voice to that struggle. And to make sure that white people's feet were held to the fire of accountability. And he was a prophet. Malcolm was a prophet. And prophets, a lot of people, well, I'll say some people may think that somehow a prophet is supposed to always come bearing good news, happy news, news that makes you feel good. That's not a prophet. What a prophet does is they tell you the truth, and most of the time, it's not good. Right? It's not good because it means that something isn't right and something needs to change. Right? Prophets don't come and say, hey, by the way, everything is perfect. By the way, there's nothing wrong with society. By the way, every single decision that you have made about the, society, people, minorities has been on point. No, he told them the legal system, the police, law enforcement, legislation, redlining. He pointed out all the things that were not right, and he even told black people as a form of encouragement to find out who you are, find out where you come from, so that you can better understand who you are, and then you can better deal with what you need to do. Yes, he was a member of the Nation of Islam. And ultimately, that was the start of, then this was after his life on the in the streets. There was a lot of people that, you know, said he was radical, and, you know, how dare he? And no, he became a part of an organization that was about black power, black empowerment. And he fought for black people. Now, unfortunately, it was an assassin's bullet that cut his life short, but while he was alive, Malcolm was he was instrumental, I think, in causing black people to have courage. And when they saw him speak so vociferously and engaging and being unafraid of white men, which a lot of black men in particular at that time were intimidated by, his lack of fear, we ain't scared. And he was one of the originals, from that time. That is what helped to, in my opinion, propel the civil rights struggle forward. Now, as we turn the page to Martin Luther King Jr., Martin, educated, PhD, Baptist preacher, and very much a nonviolent individual in terms of his philosophy. You know, he talked about Gandhi and, of course, Jesus and the sacrifices that you have to make to show love to your to the enemy, to your oppressors. Now, of course, Malcolm disagreed with that philosophy and did not believe that you could love your enemies out of their hate. And if I have to be completely honest, I feel the same way. I think there's probably a little bit of room for both, but let's continue. So for Martin and the nonviolent attitude that he had, it also stirred a lot of emotions in the Black community. Now, Martin was, I think, from a public speaking persona. He was a little bit more gifted and appealing because I think white America, they could tolerate him a little bit more because he never espoused by any means necessary. He didn't call white people white devils. He didn't come out and get in their faces so vocally as Malcolm did. And I think, you know, there was a perception that he was weak. And I think white America felt like, well, as long as he's preaching nonviolence and as long as, you know, we perceive him as someone in a weakened state, then we'll tolerate him. Right. And he was a little bit more adept at working within the political system, working with politicians, working with legislation to actually bring about the kind of change that was needed. The 1964, the Voting Rights Act, which unfortunately, as of today, was gutted, I think a couple of years ago by Congress. But at that time, with Lyndon B. Johnson signing that into law, giving and guaranteeing rights of Black people to vote, that helped to create an opportunity for the oppressed, the disenfranchised, to cast votes and to be for their vote to matter. Now, both were arrested, right? For Malcolm, when he was known as Red in the streets, he was arrested. And Martin was arrested, and that was for protests. And wrote a book, Letter from a Birmingham Jail. It's a good book. Get over there and read that. And so as I think about these things and knowing that, unfortunately, the state and the climate of America, it's probably never going to change as it relates to how it views Black people, Black men in particular. So my attitude, I would lean more towards the Malcolm side, because I think that now in particular, there are so many distractions in this world, you know, the internet and media and cell phones and all these things that you do have to yell and you do have to scream and you do have to do something to get white America's attention, to let them know you're not going to continue to put your foot on my neck and me just say, I'm going to love you through. I'm going to make sure that I respect the fact that, well, you know, you don't know any better. No, you're going to know better. You're going to learn. You're going to know better. Now, I cannot say, you know, which one ultimately would have prevailed, right? Because as we all know, both of them met their death by an assassin's bullet, which is telling to me. And one could draw the conclusion, right, that as Black men, whether we show love or whether we show a forcefulness that you're going to listen and respect me, that there are parts of the world, America, I'll say, that don't give a damn. They just want to kill you because they don't want to hear anything. And that's the other conclusion that I draw. It doesn't matter what we say, where we go, what we do. They just don't even want to hear your voice. They don't even want you around. They don't want to see you. They don't want to hear you. They don't want to look at you. They don't respect you. And so when you take that and you draw those conclusions, the only emotion that comes to the surface is anger. It's anger and it's frustration. And it's like, oh, okay, so you think that you're going to treat me like a child to be seen and not heard. No, I am a man and I will be treated and respected as such. Period. So there's no excuse. And anybody listening to this, black or white, if you yourself, and I always say this, if you haven't done anything, right, you have black friends, you have black neighbors, you have black coworkers or whatever, and you have not ever taken a stand to say something in the face of the open racism, you are part of the problem. And honestly, I don't even know what can be done, to be honest. I think that America has gotten to a point where it's so apathetic, right? It's just given itself over to, oh, well, right? And I can't afford that. See, it's my life on the line. Literally, it's my life on the line. And millions of other black men. So my plea and my call to any black man, you know, listening, don't shrink yourself down. Continue to stand up, because we have nothing to lose at all but our chains. Well, I want to thank you for checking out another podcast of Ferocious Talk. You got some great food for thought. My name is A1, and we ain't scared.